البحر الأبيض
المتوسط
مثل
أوروبا
بروسبيغاس
لاجئ
أيوه.
الوصول الاستياء
سينورا
الحدود
كيمدل.
الخطر
اللجوء بوليتيكي
مار مديتيران
مار مديتيران
ميغراسيون
ريفوجيادو
arrivo
Europa
sono migrazione pericolo asilo
frontera
politica
arrivé frontière
peligro
danger
politica
réfugié Europe.
Hallo und herzlich willkommen zu einer neuen Podcast-Folge von Freie Räder. Das ist ein Podcast der Taz Panther Stiftung in Berlin. Mein Name ist Gemma Teresa Rilla und ich leite die Stiftung. Mit diesem Podcast Freie Räder wollen wir euch unterschiedliche Projekte der Stiftung vorstellen. Heute geht es ums EU-Migrationsprojekt, in dem wir Journalistinnen aus 6 Ländern des Mittelmeerraums zusammenbringen. Heute zu Gast habe ich Agus Morales, ein Journalist aus Spanien, der ist Chefredakteur der Zeitschrift 5Ws. Und ich habe auch heute zu Gast Ebaba Hameida. Sie ist Journalistin und wurde in einem Flüchtlingslager in Tindouf in Algerien geboren. Über die Jahre hat sich auf Migration und Flucht in Nordafrika spezialisiert und inzwischen wohnt sie auch in Spanien und arbeitet für die öffentlich-rechtliche Radio und Fernsehen im Lande. Der Podcast wird auf Englisch verlaufen, deswegen wechsle ich jetzt ins Englische. Good morning, Agus Morales. Good morning, Ebaba Hameida.
Good morning, Gemma. Guten Tag.
Hola, ¿qué tal? Buenos días.
So today we are going to speak about migration between Morocco and Spain. These migration flows between these two countries are not always reaching the international headlines when we look into that, for example, from a German perspective. I mean, we have a lot of headlines related to migration in Greece, in Italy, but much less coming from Morocco and Spain. That's one question we would like to tackle during this podcast episode, but also the question how much room for maneuver has a left-wing government like the one of Pedro Sánchez, who is governing Spain since 2018, when the European Union is swifting right. So these two questions I would like to speak with these two guests. When I was searching for headlines related to Morocco and Spain, I came across some articles from June 2022. That was a big story that between 1,300 and 2,000 men, they attempted to jump over the fence, the 6 to 10 meter high wire fence surrounding Melilla. Melilla is one of the two Spanish enclaves in North Africa. So they tried to attempt these wire fences and a lot of them died because of the exaggerated use of violence by the Moroccan and Spanish police guards. But beside that, during this time, it was also news that the Spanish government was undertaking pushbacks. Around 500 people were immediately deported. And also quoting the article we published in the Taz, we said that nevertheless, the head of the Spanish left-wing government, Pedro Sánchez, praised the Spanish border guards for their extraordinary work in fending off a violent attack on the integrity of the country. So, Agus, that would be a question for you. How does it work together? I mean, when we speak about pushbacks and when we speak about this violence at the European borders, we have the image of a rather right-wing government.
Well, firstly, thank you for having me, Gemma. And I think, okay, we have two key points here. First of it is, I think, more domestic. If you look at, like, with a historical perspective, there's no big difference between a socialist party government or a popular party government. So the center-left and center-right wing governments, which Spain had since 1975. Especially in terms of migration. You can see differences between the main two parties in other issues, social issues, even economic issues. But in terms of migration, this is a state policy in Spain. I think this is important to understand. Even the language Pedro Sánchez uses, or the one he used in the Melilla massacre, he said that it was a violent assault, which was threatening the sovereignty of Spain. This is the kind of language that would be used by Partido Popular, which is the right-wing party, but also even by far-right party. So there's no big difference in this regard, and also in the specific policies about migration, especially at the borders, and especially when we talk about the relation with Morocco, which even with the Socialist Party tends to be this relationship closer to Morocco. In terms of the European perspective, you were also asking about this, Gemma. I think that, once again, it's not that the pressure comes from Brussels and then the national government does whatever they say in Brussels. In this regard, I think the national interest prevails. The thing is that both perspectives, at the end, they are the same. They are trying to build this European fortress, which we've been talking about a lot in this 21st century. It's the same logic, right? It has different nuances. No? For instance, countries like Spain, Greece, or Italy, of course, they complain because they are the first countries where people arrive from the south. So they say, no, we need to rethink how people get here to Europe. But at the end, the logic is similar, even though, of course, there are differences. No, we know that especially in Eastern Europe, there are some governments like Hungary, Poland, which are more anti-migration. But at the end, a government like the one in Spain, which in other issues, I think, it shows ideological differences with other countries. In terms of migration, in my opinion, there's no big difference.
As it happens in other governments at the EU border, like Turkey, for instance, or Tunisia, that have cooperation agreements with the European Union, Turkey since 2016, to which extent is Morocco or Algeria using migration as a weapon? Ebaba, what would you think is the profile of the migrants or refugees coming to Spain by Morocco or Algeria? And how are they treated by the locals in the northern Africa?
El perfil de las personas migrantes que llegan a las Islas Canarias va como variando, ¿no? Hay dos grupos.
The profile of migrants arriving in the Canary Islands via Morocco varies. There are two groups. They are the people who have immigrated within Africa, who have spent years and years tracing their migratory route until they reach North Africa, in the hope of being able to cross and knock on the doors of Europe. But also in the last year, we have seen how the list of nationalities that top these profiles are mainly people from Morocco, Algeria, and then Mali, Guinea, Ivory Coast. And then we have another group, the North Africans themselves, who are living in a post-pandemic economic crisis with very, very high inflation, which pushes them to risk their lives at sea and seek a future in Europe.
Una crisis económica post-pandemia con una inflación muy, muy alta y que les empuja a arriesgar su vida en el mar y a buscarse un futuro en Europa.
The profile of people that we met when attempting to cross the Melilla fence on June 24th, 2022, were Sudanese people who had been trying to get to Europe for 6, 7, or 8 years. Those people have left their countries many years ago in an attempt to get to Europe. They were people who fled from the war in Sudan, who had gone through Chad, through Libya. They had gone as far as Niger, Mauritania, then Sahara, until reaching Morocco, or through Mali, and then crossed to Algeria in an attempt to get to Morocco and then be able to cross the fence. Those people were fleeing the dangers and the dramas they faced in Libya, a country where there are mafias, where the rights of migrants are violated, where their money is taken from them, where they are exploited, where they suffer all kinds of violations and physical and psychological humiliations. So after such experiences, they give up trying to cross through the central Mediterranean from Libya and reorganize their migratory route again, trying to reach Morocco and then cross to Spain. So what happens is, the profile of these people who live in small boats is usually those with more economic capacity. Well, they can afford paying for a boat. But people who really have no money, they risk their lives trying to jump over the fence in Melilla and Ceuta. Most of them Sudanese people. When I interviewed some of them, there were people who had tried it more than 20 times. So that's what it is.
The profile of migrants coming via Morocco. These people are mostly young, they're mostly men, although we have also seen how women have been increasingly occupying more and more boats and being more present, especially women from Senegal. They flee due to economic needs, hoping to build their lives and their future in Europe again.
Económicas de rehacer su vida y su futuro en Europa. Cuando estuve en Casablanca y pude ver en qué condiciones vivían las personas que habían intentado cruzar la valla de Melilla.
When I was in Casablanca in Morocco and was able to see the conditions in which people had tried to cross the Melilla fence they were living, we found people who live in the suburbs of the big cities and live in an absolutely non-human condition. These are mainly people who come from sub-Sahara Africa, and I also saw this in Tunisia and Algeria. These are very impoverished profiles of people with very precarious working conditions where their situation is almost impossible to legalize. Because these people fleeing the war in Sudan had even applied for international protection at the UNHCR offices in Morocco. And yet this right is not recognized. So these are people who live in overcrowded conditions in the large suburbs of the big cities, completely marginalized. And then on top of that, what we experienced in the Northern African societies is the unspoken issue of racism towards people coming from sub-Saharan Africa, Black Africa. These people are not treated as people. They are mistreated in Morocco or in Algeria. Of course, they kind of coexist with the Moroccans, with the Algerian people or Tunisian people. And they show some kind of solidarity. But in fact, it is rather a form of charity. These people, they help them with a piece of bread or give them some money. But the institutions in these countries, they don't work on the rights of the people who immigrate. They let them live in a bad condition. It is like a strategy of attrition or deterioration. To be honest, as Europeans, we should really ask ourselves, which is the price that we are allowing those agreements between Europe and countries in north of Africa to happen? The rights of these migrants within Morocco have been completely annihilated. We have families who have still not been able to recognize the body of their child after the Melilla massacre in June 2022. There are still people who are missing. The ones that survived were taken in buses and sent back to the suburbs. The injured people were not brought to hospitals. And moreover, many told us that when trying to cross the fence in Melilla, the Moroccan police handed them over to the Algerian gendarmerie, and the Algerian police threw them into the Niger desert where they had to try to survive. So this is for these people, this is the cost that we are paying and that these people are paying when they try to go to the European Union. And these countries, also the European countries, but also the people on the other side of the European Union, these countries do not respect the rights of migrants.
Delega el control fronterizo en terceros países, países que desde luego no respetan los derechos de las personas que migran.
Thanks, Debaba, for this moving testimony. I would like to come back to Agus. You've criticized in your articles and also before in your first intervention that also the media are contributing to give an image of invasion, like migration linked to invasion. At this point, I would like to ask, which is the role of the journalist? How should we better report on migration in order to, I don't know, to mobilize perhaps people to the street? Agus, do you think that with another more like constructive narrative, journalistic narratives, we could change that?
If you look now at the last 20 years, there's many journalists in Spain, in Europe, in Northern Africa, etc., which have a very long experience covering migration. They did a reflection on how to do it. We all make mistakes, but I think there's a very high level of professionals dealing with this issue. The problem is how this information reaches the audiences. So at the end, if what you get, it comes from mainstream media, which is normally focusing on other issues, and they deal with migration like it's a matter of security for the state. This is the case of most of the media at the end. The problem is more the industry than the journalists. That's my view. And in terms of migration, it's very clear. It's not only xenophobic contents, but there's also another thing, which is media reproducing, media copying the language of power. Sometimes it's not invasion, it's national sovereignty or flow of migration is not the worst one, but there's other expressions also which tend to dehumanize people who are in the move. So all this is where I think it needs to change, and it's not easy because at the end it's related how the system works in terms of, I mean, the mass media system. So that's the main issue. But I think that there's a hope for change because there's many journalist professionals who are doing a great job. And if you want to get good information about migration, you can do it.
Yeah, for instance, I mean, your project, no? The magazine 5Ws, you are working like with more long-term stories, more human stories, and trying to prevent stereotypes, I would say, you know, that's a good example.
Many independent media, and also in the, sorry, because before I said mainstream media, that's it. No, it's not, I think it's not fair. Like in mainstream media, you can read wonderful stories about migration and with a very interesting focus. The problem is that this is always going to be smaller. It's always going to be overshadowed by the mainstream vision of migration, which I think it's ingrained on this idea of Fortress Europe. And all these myths about migration, they are ingrained in the European psyches. The impact on economy, even in cultural, I would say, supremacism, like deep issues, which maybe with a few stories you cannot change it, but slowly, you believe in like your little contribution to changing these mainstream ideas.
I would like to speak about the role of the media in the north of Africa. How does the public opinion in North Africa looks at the refugee policy or the migration policy in Europe? Is it also perceived as a fortress? And the second question, we had in the previous episode the experience of our Greek colleague explaining how difficult it is to report on the spot on the refugee camps, for example, in Greece. How is the access for the journalists in the refugee camps in Morocco or in Algeria? I mean, yourself, you were born and grew up in Tindouf, in a refugee camp. So I guess that you have something to say on that.
Hay que tener en cuenta que son países, estamos hablando de Argelia, Marruecos.
You have to bear in mind that these countries we are talking about, namely Algeria and Morocco, there's no freedom of press over there. In those countries, local journalists themselves face big problems to talk about. Corruption, political problems in the country, the economic crisis, and this also affects how to cover migration. I have to work with a lot of discretion, with a lot of fear when reporting on migration in Morocco or Algeria. And above all, we have to protect our sources and people who are giving us their testimony. Every time I'm there as a journalist, I feel that I'm being chased, followed. This is the case in Morocco and in Algeria. But we have unfortunately seen the setbacks that Tunisia is suffering in terms of freedom of the press since the government of Kais Saied came to power, and how this is also affecting the media coverage.
En cuanto a la libertad de prensa desde que Kais Saied ha llegado al gobierno.
Local colleagues denounce the controls and threats that the press suffers every time they want to deal with human rights issues. So in this context, where the press is suffocated, where the local press faces many dilemmas, where they take risks every time they bring these issues to light, we find that at the end, the result on local media is a silence. There is no information on migration. And this has, of course, repercussions on the Maghreb society itself, which is unaware of the situation of these migrants. And what happens? As a consequence, there is a dehumanization, because when people talk about something, they talk about figures and data. They are not told the stories behind these people who immigrate, or the reasons that push them to immigrate, or the context in their countries of origin as to why they immigrate. When I'm in Algeria, I have the feeling that the media just don't speak about migration directly. It is a topic that is not talked about. So while there are in fact groups of black people who go in and out, who can be expelled, the local media in Northern Africa don't make an issue out of it.
No, del que no se habla. Entonces, hay grupos de personas negras que entran y salen.
Immigration is not an issue for them. It remains untackled. That makes society itself ignore the real picture that exists about migration. On top of that, we have the issue of access for the media. The access to migration topics is often easier for journalists who come from abroad than for local journalists, in fact. And when arriving from foreign countries, we are like paratroopers and we try to locate the school where these migrants went, the suburbs where they live in Casablanca. But of course, the local authorities don't want us to see this. So foreign journalists often find access through the migrants themselves, who want their story to be told and who collaborate with the press to show them the conditions in which they live. But even when finding them is very difficult because of the local governments are in the end trying very hard to hide their stories, and they see it as a subject that it is better not to deal with or not to talk about or even not to address.
Porque al final, desde arriba, lo que se quiere es ocultar y es un tema del que es mejor no tratar y no hablar y no abordar.
In the bilateral relation between Spain and Morocco when it comes to migration, I mean, Sánchez has stressed in the last months that the relations between both countries are like at their very best moment in decades. And this implies also the very difficult question of Western Sahara. International law, the United Nations defines it as the last remaining uncolonized territory on the continent. And its status, the one of Western Sahara, has been in a limbo since the withdrawal of the colonial power Spain. To which extent is Western Sahara, this conflict, this issue, this unsolved issue, being used also as a pressure method when it comes to migration?
Me personally, I have no doubt that the Western Sahara has been used as a bargaining chip for Morocco to open or close the tap to migrants that are willing to go up north to Spain. If we analyze the migratory phenomenon in the last years and the data corresponding with it, depending on the different political stages that bilateral relations between Spain and Morocco have gone through, we see how it does correspond to these peaks of crisis. A clear example was when, for example, in the Spanish exclave of Ceuta, the Spanish government allowed the Secretary General, the President of the Sahara Republic, to enter Spain to receive medical treatment. Weeks later, we saw how Morocco allowed thousands of people to cross the border via Ceuta, the Spanish exclave in the north of Africa. And among them, there were many minors, and there were many Moroccan minors, so the Moroccan government let its own children go. So, of course, it is used, the unsolved conflict and situation in the Western Sahara. And, of course, the politics of the Sahara determines the treatment that is given or not given to migrants. But to be honest, the thing is, the Sahara issue is already clear in the United Nations and in Spain. Despite its very good relations with Morocco, still has this unfinished issue which needs to be solved, especially now that Spain is talking a lot about the recognition of the Palestinian state. Spain still has a territory to decolonize. It still has to comply with the various UN resolutions. And this is something that Spain has to resolve itself. On the other hand, immigration or the movement of population cannot be used as a bargaining chip. And from this point of view, I think that the media have a fundamental role to play investigating, in making people aware and in demonstrating. And when a basic right, such as the right to immigrate, is interfered with political and strategic interests, we need to do something to change this.
We mentioned at the beginning that when speaking from a German perspective, a German media perspective, Morocco-Spain migration is quite forgotten. And specifically when it comes to the Atlantic route, which is in fact one of the deadliest or one of the most dangerous. Also quoting another article from the TAZ, from the newspaper, that was January this year, we had a headline saying that security forces in Morocco prevented hundreds of migrants from reaching the Spanish North African exclaves of Ceuta and Melilla, as well as the Canary Island, and that about 1,000 people were arrested. So when we think about Canary Island from a German perspective, what we come up with is tourism. These last weeks we've been hearing about the protests against this tourism, but rarely we connect, I mean, we in terms of the German audience is connecting Canary Islands with migrants, as for example is the case in Lesbos or Lampedusa. So August, how is the situation in the Canary Island? I mean, how do locals cope with these migration flows coming to the island?
I think a very interesting year was 2020, during the pandemic, actually. That year, thousands of people arrived to the Canary Islands. It's an old route, and it was, let's say, reactivated after many years in which, as you said, I think all Europe was more looking at Central and Eastern Mediterranean. Of course, when you look at the at the Western Mediterranean, it's always the logic of Spain and Morocco. It all becomes this kind of binational problem, even though it has European repercussions, of course. And also, there's other reasons. Like, for instance, in Spain, there's a Spanish agency which does rescue, it's Salvamento Marítimo. Situation is very different in Central Mediterranean and in Eastern Mediterranean, as you know. Also, we've seen, like, 2015, the year of the so-called refugee crisis, which was more, I think, a crisis of Europe, dealing with people arriving to Europe. But anyway, many of the people, or the more than 1 million people that arrived to Europe, they came from Syria and Afghanistan, so from the eastern flank. All this, I guess, is the explanation about why maybe you don't get so many news. Also, of course, Italy with far-right government and the blocking of even rescue boats, etc. It's a larger story. Then at the end, like Melilla, for instance, we were mentioning before, this massacre in which I think both Morocco and Spain were responsible. It doesn't fit that much, right, from a European perspective, right, for the narrative. At the end, I think, of course, it's important to understand that the people arriving to Spain, to Italy, and to Greece, they are dying and they are suffering. And of course, as journalists, I think it's our responsibility to show what's going on in the borders, right? Like, the borders for me right now in all southern Europe, they are not the limits of sovereignty, of security. They're like factories of pain. And it's sad because Europe has become a negative project in the last 2 decades. And there's other ideas which we explored in the past, and I think which are better for European countries and for the people trying to make it to Europe, which are not a majority. Because the rhetoric of invasion, I think this myth of invasion grow in the European minds, and statistics show that this is far from true.
I would like to close this conversation today and this podcast from the Taz Panda Foundation, looking into the coming weeks. So in the first week in June, the European Union is voting on there are elections in the European Parliament. August, you said before that the European project has turned into a negative project. So how do you look into the EU elections, the upcoming EU elections from a Spanish perspective in terms of migration?
Okay, I'm going to try to be fair, because I think when we criticize European migration policies or European policies in general, there's a lot to say, and sometimes we tend to be we tend to simplify. So we, as you know, we have this European Pact of Migration and Asylum. This is a tool which really allows you to do a lot of things to keep building the European fortress. I think if you look at the pact, you have all the tools, but at the end, it's all up to the states, I would say. And it's true that there's a paradox in the European Union, that the diversity of the European Union in terms of all the countries involved makes Europe less diverse in terms of how it receives people, from how it receives migration. And you can see it with the negotiation for this pact. I know that some states, they wanted to have a different approach, but at the end, that's what they agreed on. For the elections, we see that probably the Popular Party is set to win, but the main issue would be whether the far-right parties, they have power or not, and what's the impact they will have on migration. In the past 2 years, I would say that with this pact, there's been room for agreement, but because many parties, they move to more restrictive positions. This process of the construction of Fortress Europe, I think it keeps going on, and we will need to see what is the emphasis, whether a more, I was going to say solidarity, but let's say whether a more, at least a protection of people or protection of borders. This is the big decision, and so far it's been protection of borders.
In the Tatzpander Foundation, we've had some projects with African journalists from the Sub-Sahara, and they've claimed many times also during their visit in Berlin how difficult it is to get visa to enter the European Union, and especially if they compare it to other regions or other countries like China or Russia, that they are just opening much easier, no, their doors to welcome them to study or to work. So, Ebaba, do you think that that's perhaps one of the problems we are facing right now when it comes to these movements of people, no, between, in this case, between Africa and Europe? Is the problem perhaps the very, very, very hard visa policy of the European Union?
In fact, that's what all young Africans tell us when you talk to African youth. I've met so many people in Senegal telling me that they have tried to apply for a visa to come to Spain. And what's the problem? The requirements are very complicated. There are not even appointments in the consulates. And sometimes the Spanish consulate services are being outsourced to private companies where in order to get an appointment, you have to pay money. In other words, it is a system that is failing in these countries. Therefore, it also fails the hope of being able to arrive legally in Europe. And why? Why is that? Because if it takes so long, if there are no appointments, if the requirements that are demanded are unattainable for many people, it is impossible to opt for a legal way to come to Spain. For example, in the case of Senegal, recently they were also deprived of a transit visa. That means that if they want to travel to another country and pass through a Spanish airport, they also have to comply with a transit visa requirement. It's just obstacles and obstacles and obstacles. Many sources told us that people, for example, who are politically persecuted cannot arrive at a Spanish airport and say that I am persecuted. People who suffer discrimination because of, for example, their sexual orientation, many of them were saying that they could not express their own sexual orientation in their country of origin. And then once they arrived at a safe airport, they were presenting their case to the police. Now it is not possible anymore because of this transit visa. But in fact, Spain has the obligation to take care of them and to study their case for them. These people no longer have that possibility, though. So it is a situation that really pushes these young Africans to the limit. Because with our European passport, we can travel the world and we can travel wherever we want and we can do whatever we want in these countries. But those people from Black Africa, they do not even have the right to travel, to go on to a trip, to study abroad. I remember recently a young Senegalese boy who had obtained a scholarship to study in France. The university accepted him, but it was impossible for him to get a visa. And in the end, he chose to get on a boat and cross without visa. On top of that, if we look at Spain, where migration is a recent phenomenon that started in the 1990s, there is also the unsolved question of how to reunite families that have immigrated. The procedures and bureaucracy are very long, and they have a lot of requirements that even the Spanish families themselves wouldn't be able to meet in order to be able to bring their children to Spain. So, in fact, this has meant, for example, in the last few years, that there are many unaccompanied minors who have left towards Spain on a boat alone because their father or mother is already in Spain for years, and they have not been able to solve the bureaucratic obstacles in order to reunite the family. So in the end, the miners chose to get on a boat and to reach Spain and then reunite with the family. So what can we say on this? On the one hand, we have the problems in the countries in Africa with the chaos and deficiencies that exist in the consulates when applying for asylum, international protection, and even for a tourist visa. And on the other hand, we also find that the administrative obstacles in European countries like Spain, in order to regroup the migrant families, make it also difficult or even impossible for the descendants of migrants to apply for asylum. As a consequence, this also pushes the descendants of these people to throw themselves away and risk their lives in the Atlantic or in the Mediterranean Sea.
Las administrativas aquí de reagrupación hacen también empuja a que los descendientes de esas personas se tiren y arriesguen su vida en el mar.
So thank you very much, August Morales from the magazine 5Ws in Spain, and Ebaba Hameida, originally from the refugee camp in Tindouf, Algeria, and now member of the board of Reporters Without Borders in Spain. It was a pleasure having you today here.
Me too, Gemma. Thank you very much. Danke schön.
Muchísimas gracias a ti, Gemma. Un abrazo.
Für die Zuhörer und Zuhörerinnen, es wird noch eine dritte Folge von dem Podcast Freie Rede in Bezug aufs Projekt EU-Migration geben. Das wird Anfang Juni sein. Aber zuvor, für die, die in Berlin sind, es wird eine Veranstaltung am 29. Mai um 19 Uhr in der Taz-Kantine stattfinden. Da werden wir diese Journalistinnen aus dem Mittelmeer zu Gast haben in Berlin. Sie können gerne vorbeikommen und sich an der Diskussion beteiligen. Die Europawahl steht vor der Tür Anfang Juni und das Thema Migration ist wichtiger denn je. Ich bin Gemma Teresa Rilla von der Tatzpander Stiftung. Einen schönen Tag noch. Tschüss.
البحر الابيض
المتوسط
مثل
Refugiado.
Arrivo.
Europa.
Sono.
Migrazione.
Asilo. Pericolo. Asilo.
Frontera.
Politica.
Arrivé. Frontière.
Peligro.
Danger.
Politica.
Réfugié. Europe.